Blog Talk Radio.
Everyone, I'd like to welcome all of you back to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. Today we're going to look at Contact Report 229. Pick back up there. These are the words of the prophet Jeremiah, which was one of the earlier incarnations of the spirit form that resides in Edward Albert Meyer. And we'll pick up on page 14 of this rather long contact report. It says here, the prophet of the new time will mourn, for the human being has altered and destroyed the face of the earth and will be approaching total annihilation. He will also point out with harsh words of truth that the human being is neither the master nor the feudal lord of the earth, nor of its mountains, brooks, rivers, lakes, oceans, meadows, fields, pastures, and forests. He will indicate that for the purpose of profit, the human being dangerously and in a rampant manner plows through the earth and sky with powerful machines and cuts furrows with big ships in rivers, lakes, and oceans in order to wage wars worldwide and to transport large masses of human beings to other countries, and to wipe out all aquatic creatures for the purpose of procuring food. Thus also illnesses and epidemics will spread throughout the entire world, carried by innumerable travelers who will be spreading in all countries. Various species of animals and plants from many countries will spread in like manner throughout the world through the transportation of foodstuffs and goods of trade, and will take root in foreign countries and will disturb and negatively influence the course of nature. Yet a far worse time is still to come, because through the human being's fault, large parts of the earth will become barren and unproductive. The huge forests will fall victim to the human being's greed for gold and money. And let me just point out here that the forests moderate the weather. And one simple thing that the forests do is they create a rough surface. When the air currents come across, turbulence is created, and air will go up and form clouds, and it'll help it to cause it to rain. So, and of course, the shade creates a coolness in the soil. If you've ever been in a really thick forest like we have here where I live, you can go into the forest and it'll be 20 degrees cooler than it is out in the sun. So the forests moderate the weather. They keep the storms from getting too intense. But our huge forests will fall victim to the human being's greed for gold and money. And the air will burn, because the air will be destroyed through the human being's production of artificial materials. The waters will turn brackish and poisonous, as well as foul-smelling. And drinking water will become scarce. And we've seen that in some of the third world, and even here in the center part of the United States, the Ogallala Aquifer is being depleted. But in many areas, there's just not enough drinking water, and this is going to continue to be the case. The human being will unrestrainedly, unscrupulously, and irresponsibly exploit the earth's treasures and exhaust the wealth of the earth's resources down to the last bushel. The entire world will be polluted through various kinds of filth, which will cause all life to wilt, and the human being's hatred will grow beyond all bounds. And also in his own family, it will not be any different. Gradually, the human being will come to be like a lonesome wild animal that stalks after the life of its victim. And that's kind of the way people are now. The electronic media and the use of cell phones, you can see couples that are supposed to be out together, and instead of talking to each other, they're both on their cell phone, and that's where we're heading. I'm reading Contact Report 229, and these are supposedly the words of Jeremiah when the spirit form of Nicodemus incarnated as Jeremiah on the earth, and he has some very interesting comments about the time we live in, which is the third millennium. And I know I often talk about how it all began in the Meyer material and how Billy came to know Sloth and how Sloth told Billy about the third millennium and how difficult it would be during our time. One of the other things that Sloth taught Billy was something called spiritual telepathy, which enabled Edward to receive information from a spiritual plane called Arahat Athrasada. Now, Arahat Athrasada is the first level or plane where pure spirit forms dwell. And it takes millions and millions of years to get to this level of evolution. And the Meyer spirit form has been through all of these different higher levels of evolution and has come back here to the earth in order to have these seven incarnations. And he has been Henoch, Eliah, Josiah, Jeremiah, Emmanuel, Muhammad. And in each one of these lifetimes, he taught an ancient universal teaching called the teaching of the spirit. Now, as I had said, one of these prophets was called Henoch. And Henoch was born on February 3rd, 9300 BC. And Henoch wrote what we call the Henoch prophecies today. And that's Henoch prophecies are found in Contact Report 215. And Contact Report 215 talks about destruction in North America. And it says far in the West, it will be different. The United States of America will be a country of total destruction. And this hasn't happened yet, but we certainly politically may be seeing the beginnings of this, because we can certainly see a corruption within our government that's just staggering. And it's I don't want to bring politics into the show too much, but it's pretty obvious the level of corruption. The total destruction that will occur in the United States, there will be multiple causes, part of which will be our global conflicts. And we're creating incredible hatred against the United States. And there will be enormous catastrophes in America, according to Meyer material. Now, I hope that Billy's wrong about this. And it must be that I think we have a chance because I stay in America. But there will be apocalyptic events, according to Meyer information, and it will be the use of unbelievably deadly and destructive weapons. And one of the strange things that we will see are what's called clone murder machines. People that will be clones that will just be here for the purpose of murder. So we're going to see firestorms, gigantic hurricanes, and we've talked much about the fires. We're seeing the fires already. And so, and according to Henoch, the truth about our industrialized countries is they only seem to be civilizations, but they're really not even civilizations. So anyway, that is the Henoch prophecies, which are very disturbing. Now, one of the other lives that Billy lived was a man named Elijah. And Elijah was born about 891 BCE, and he is one of the prophets in the Nicodemian line. And Elijah was flown to Srinagar, Kashmir, in India, on a beam ship. One of the interesting stories about that incarnation. I've talked a little bit about how in Contact Report 229, we see the words of the predictions of the prophet Jeremiah. So we have multiple different lives where Edward Albert Meyer has had, I shouldn't say Edward Albert Meyer, I should say his spirit form has incarnated as these well-known prophets. One of the other incarnations of the Meyer spirit form is of the prophet Muhammad. And Muhammad is given credit with the construction of the Islam, the cult of Islam. And according to the Pleiarian, the cult of Islam was created to Christianity. In other words, the prophet Muhammad, his teaching was designed to head off, to restrain Christianity, which would have caused, if Christianity, according to the Meyer information, was let alone, it would have caused the total destruction of mankind. Now, that's a pretty bold statement, but evidently is the case. So anyway, I just wanted to cover a few of those earlier incarnations, because remember, the Meyer spirit form has been on about a 13,000-year mission here on the Earth. And one of the things he's bringing back to us is the original teaching of the spirit, the teaching about creation, and the teaching about love. And one of the things I love to quote is the teaching about the universal consciousness, and that the universal consciousness says the incredible splendor of nature is the visible expression of the love of creation. And the laws of creation are so wonderfully arranged that people everywhere come up against the radiating love of creation. But I don't think people recognize when they do come up against the love of creation. Love will continuously be the purpose of our existence and is all timely in its given logic. It's interesting that love is logical. Nature can be defined as the world without human beings or civilization. Nature can also be defined as the elements of the natural world, whether it's mountains, trees, or rivers. The German word for creation is Schöpfung, and the German word for splendor is Pracht. And splendor can be seen as a great and impressive beauty. And the beauty of nature is said to be indescribable. And one other quote I love to bring is, every tiny plant, every tiny animal fulfills its purpose in love and was created by creation according to the same law of love. And all life is in the absolute perfection that it should be through creation. And every life form lives exactly to creation's plan except human beings. Now, one of the important aspects of creation's plan is the way our thinking should be. And we should have humility, but we also need to be able to think independently. And Billy describes this in The Might of Thoughts. He says, "But those who think that they are great are truthfully not independent. Rather, they are kowtowing and submissive, and they are behind and underdeveloped in the actual evolution and being a human being. These human beings therefore only appear to live in great self-assuredness. And this is indeed the case even when they kid themselves and feign it to themselves and selfishly nurture this opinion. But inside, they are at variance with themselves and do not like themselves. And exactly this is the case for a large part of the pain with which these human beings afflict themselves and also others." You know, one of the things that I've noticed over the years of studying the Meyer material is that you can occasionally go at variance with yourself. What does that mean? One thing that I notice is that when we go at variance with ourselves, we're no longer neutral positive, that we become these psychically disturbed human beings, and we become obsessed. We see black all and everything, and our perceptive ability becomes very limited, and our world of thoughts falls prey to this limitation. And we focus on one issue and we blow one issue way out of proportion. And our thoughts are forced into a cycle in which we have the same thoughts and the same themes of thoughts that appear over and over again. It's a rotation of the thoughts that comes forth. And once this rotation of thoughts begins to operate, it's very hard to break away. And this is one of the things we need to learn to beat, is we need to learn to beat this uncontrolled thinking that focuses on negative things. One of the things that I think the Might of Thoughts has taught us is that we really need to focus on self-cognition, because what the human being thinks, he makes real. And good and positive thoughts we should nurture and tend. And it's important to have a good opinion of yourself. The impression and the thoughts which the human being forms in regard to him or herself are the key to the failure or success of her most or his most secret or most public plans, because they are realized by means of the Might of Thoughts. If the human being forms an inadequate picture of him or herself, and he or she nurtures insufficiently progressive thoughts, then he or she undervalues and disregards him or herself. So one of the important things is maintaining a positive view of yourself. But our thinking is so important, because we attract what we are. And correct thinking and knowledge, it's such a monstrous power that it's able to ceaselessly attract and bring into being everything that the human thinks and longs for. You know, one of the things that the Meyer case talks about and really explains is that there is a universal consciousness that's not omniscient. It's not all powerful. In fact, it's evolving. It's a superintelligence that created our universe. It's boundlessly more intelligent than a human being. But it is not the image that our religions have created. In fact, if you wanted to really talk about what God is, the God is the inner self from which the thoughts in your own mind are created. Therefore, the human being, him or herself, creates through the might of his thoughts every one of his states, regardless of whether it is inner freedom or negative inner imprisonment. You notice when I was talking about the negative repeating thoughts, that would be a state of inner imprisonment. So if you can steer your thoughts to be neutral positive, you can have inner freedom. But if they're not neutral positive, you will not have inner freedom. One of the very important creational natural laws that I've been talking about over the past month or so is this law of striving. And let me read something here from the Might of Thoughts. But originating from these laws, it also emerges that the human being has been given an innate quality which consists of striving for that which is higher in order to be evolutive in all respects, thus also in regard to him or herself. As a result of this fact, cognizance arises that decisive factors must be consequently implanted into the human being's consciousness, which enable him to volitionally develop his consciousness-based powers, which, for example, are expressed in perseverance. So your consciousness powers are expressed by your ability to persevere. Perseverance and persistence are two examples of how your consciousness-based abilities manifest themselves. And precisely all these powers are greater and are more enormous than the human being, than we even know, than we imagine. However, one must recognize that the corresponding factors and develop the powers which are realized by the might of thoughts. And if the human being actually trains the consciousness-based mental muscles, then nothing is impossible for him anymore. That's a huge statement. So perseverance and persistence, we must develop these. We must really stick with perseverance and persistence. And without that, we're in big, big trouble. You know, there are two very important powers, the negative and the positive, and they never should be separated, but they should always be working together, because when we separate the negative and the positive, that's when we fall into what's called Essartung in the German, which means to badly get out of control of the good human nature. And the Meyer information says that wishes and prayers are not a petition to a god or saint. Rather, they are thoughts generated by oneself, which are fed back out of the consciousness and into the inner self to create a fulfillment. Let me read a little bit of one of the original prayers by Henoch. My spirit, you are almighty. Your name shall be honored. Your realm shall open, incarnate within me. Your might, the might of the consciousness, shall unfold with me on earth and in the universes. Give me my daily bread, love, and wisdom today, so I recognize my responsibility and I recognize the truth. And do not throw me into confusion and delusion, but release me from my misunderstanding. For the realm, the power of knowledge, and the knowledge within me are yours in eternity. So I guess the prayers are directed to our material consciousness block, because that's where all the work concerning the consciousness evolution of the human being is done. Here are, I think we can find some of the prayers of Nocodemian. Remember, Nocodemian is the spirit form of Edward Albert Meyer. Nocodemian is, the spirit is said to be 9,600,000,000 years old. And this is a prayer by Nocodemian. My spirit, you are all-knowing, all-capable, all-wise, all-truthfully, and all-loving in me. Your name shall be honored. Your almightiness shall spread out in me to the consciousness of my thoughts, so that I, in conscious ability, use, unfold, and implement the knowledge, powers, wisdom, truth, and the universal love, the peace, and the freedom, which are present and accumulated in me. It's very interesting, this whole idea of, at least what the Meyer material talks about as prayer. Let me jump to a somewhat different topic here. I want to talk a little bit about addiction. And addiction is a chronic brain disease that causes compulsive substance use, despite harmful consequences. And addiction can cause careers and health and relationships to be ruined. There is something called the addiction of world domination. And this is an addiction that I guess is really not that common. But there are certain powerful groups in the world right now, and I think we're seeing them play themselves out in the election right now. In the Goblet of Truth, it says that even the powerful ones of the economy are feeling the might and obeying the evil laws of the Dark Order. There's a Dark Order that the Meyer material talks about. We call it the New World Order. Some researchers talk about what's called the Hegelian dialectic, where this dark order creates a problem in society and then offers a solution to the problem. But the solution is the solution which, in the long run, benefits them the most. So let me continue here. The dark order is spreading its dangerous and fatal poison of hatred everywhere, and into everything and against everyone who does not share their same opinion. And this Dark Order, it's a organization of our governing class. It's sometimes, I think in the Goblet of Truth, it's called the Secret Dark Order. Remember, their goals are mastery of the entire earth, mastery over humanity, attaining money and power, and spreading hatred. Now, another big problem that's going on right now is something called Zionism. And this is talked about in Ask Its Explanations. Part 1, line 131. And Zionism is a worldwide Jewish movement that resulted in the establishment and the development of the State of Israel. Ron Hubbard is mentioned in Ask Its Explanation as one of the Christian sects that was, I guess, working towards world domination. Ron Hubbard, he was an author, and he founded a church of Scientology. He was a writer. He was a science fiction writer, and he developed something called a system of Dianetics. And there are some YouTube films about Ron Hubbard. So, one of the other things that the Goblet of Truth tells us is there's a kind of love, of self-love, or an ego-related love that is a vice, and it produces a kind of ruthlessness to have. In other words, when a person has the wrong kind of self-love, it will produce a kind of mercilessness, a ruthlessness to fulfill your own urges and desires. But on the other hand, there is something called a true love, a true self-love, which is the unfolding of evolution in the inner consciousness, in the world of thoughts, in the world of feelings. And Billy has an article, it's called In Praise of Love, Truth, and Wisdom. And let me read a little bit of this to you. This is out on the Freedom, the Future of Mankind site. It says, when one finds effective true love, truth, and wisdom, then one recognizes with astonishment that in all their essence and their forms, they are very simple. Nevertheless, directly because of this simplicity, the human does not want to know anything about them, nor about their meaning and value, because what is simple, he thinks, is not worth knowing and is of no significance and not precious. True love, truth and wisdom, so he believes, are only valuable when a high price must be paid to acquire them, and when they cannot be grasped nor even understood, even in their fundamentals. If it is brought home to him, the human, that true love, truth, and wisdom are the most precious of all goods, and they are free, and it can be obtained simply through the power of clear and reasonable thinking. Well, that is very interesting. So I guess true love is very simple, and it's very reasonable, and it comes through the power of clear thinking. And the human today, Billy says, is strongly imprisoned, and he has deeply rooted erroneous delusions, and he actually rejects the simplicity of true love. And in this delusion, which he has, he loses the preciousness of true love, truth, and wisdom. And we make these true love, truth, and wisdom completely complicated. And we get confused and we run into errors. And Billy, let me continue reading here. And in this delusion, he is moved in his belief and in the false love, truth, and wisdom, which are conjured up for him by the false and erroneous and confused teachings. So Billy goes on to explain that a confusion comes out of this, and that true love doesn't have to be so complicated, and that true love is based on reasonable thinking. So we talk about several kinds of addiction here. There's an addiction to world domination, which the global elite have. There is something called the addiction to our own desires, which we talked a little bit about in Contact Report 229. And there's also something called drug addiction. And it says in the Goblet of Truth that others will increasingly turn to drugs which have been partially legalized through the irrationality of those in power. And Billy has a very strong opinion that drugs, these dangerous drugs, should not be legalized. So drug addiction is another big problem in the world today. So three kinds of addiction: the addiction to world domination, the addiction to our own desires, drug addiction is another. I want to jump into the concept of unconscious thoughts, because I think addictions are many times related to unconscious thoughts we have. You know, I think we have addictions to foods and all kinds of things, and I think a lot of times these are thoughts that are below the surface that we're not completely aware of. So in the Might of Thoughts book, on page 44, it talks about we actually have unconscious thoughts. And I remember going over this, and I was very surprised by that. And it says here that the rule is the human being does not think consciously, but largely unconsciously. Consequently, the human being is almost always the unconscious cause. So we unconsciously cause these bad circumstances in our life. So what is the unconscious mind? The unconscious is the part of the mind that's inaccessible to the conscious mind, but it affects our behavior and emotions. The unconscious mind consists of these processes that occur automatically. And sometimes they're not available to our introspection. So our unconscious has the ability to cause unwanted circumstances in our life. And there is empirical evidence that suggests that unconscious phenomena include repressed feelings, automatic skills, subliminal perceptions, thoughts and habits, phobias, desires. And on page 44 here in the Might of Thoughts, it says, is a fact that while the human being wants the good and the positive, he or she constantly prevents the achievement of the good and the positive. We stop the good and positive in our own life because of these unconscious thoughts. And because our thoughts are wrongly steered, and sometimes we maintain wishes and hopes and yearnings which do not agree with what is really good and positive, and they do not harmonize with us. So what is a yearning? A yearning is a feeling of intense longing for something. It's a persistent, often melancholy desire. So what is the law of harmony? The law of harmony says that we should have this neutral, positive balance in our thinking. As a rule, suffering is always an effect of some form of wrong thinking. So, in this form, incidents of suffering are indicators that the law of harmony is being disregarded and broken. And one, therefore, is not living according to the law of being. The law of being and the law of harmony are pretty much the same thing, I think. So, that is, and all it is, it's something simple. Keeping a neutral, positive thought pattern. You're just neutral. If something, you can't be bothered by something if you're neutral about it. I keep thinking about that. If something's really bugging you, then you're not neutral about it. So now the big challenge is to figure out, well, how am I going to get neutral about this thing? In the Goblet of Truth, in page 20 or paragraph 22, verse 13, he said, it is necessary that you live in ample harmony with the powers that are in you and around you, as well as with the disharmonious powers that stand in contradiction to them. Remember, there's always a negative and a positive, and these two things have to be there in order for a balance to be. Since everything is built up in contrariness, and therefore always both poles, the positive and the negative, must be taken into consideration and included in the efficacy of equalization. So if there's a negative aspect that really bothers you, try to support the opposite of your opinion, and that will help you get to the neutral state a little quicker. So if you're sitting there in an endless cycle of negative, of repeating thoughts, supporting your own side, try to argue against yourself for a moment. That will help put you back in a neutral state. One's own thoughts can be controlled and maintained along the right path so that least inner freedom and harmony is restored. Now, some of the synonyms for harmony include unity, peace, friendship, concord. So if we have an inner harmony, it's a good possibility that we're having neutral positive thinking. And something is neutral when we're not supporting either side of a conflict or a disagreement. And Billy talks about being balanced between the negative and the positive. And in an interview in 1988, Billy said this. He said, "The self-control one possesses must be self-evident and can only be gained through arduous self-scrutiny." So we have to be continually, through a great effort and exertion, controlling our thoughts and making certain that we are neutral positive. So we have to have every iota of our thoughts must be under control, regardless of outside influences. And one must not allow even the minutest negative vibration of thought or emotion to radiate or become noticeable to others in any way. This is a 1988 interview with Billy. A totally neutral, unbiased attitude toward all forms of life and all times must be achieved, and it must become our second nature. That is a big challenge. How can you be? I think the hardest thing is being neutral about your loved ones. We really have to be neutral about them too. On page 74 of The Might of Thoughts, it talks again about unconscious processes. And these unconscious processes of perception, they run their course through the psyche, and it affects our psyche. Now, these unconscious thoughts are so powerful that they can cause, for example, the stigmata, which are the quote-unquote wounds of Christ that appear on people. And these wounds of Christ can materialize as bleeding wounds on the back and on the palms, on the loins, on the forehead. These are caused by unconscious thoughts. That's the power of our own thinking. Now, one of the aspects of our thoughts is emotion. Now, an emotion is a person's state of feeling. A scientific discourse has drifted to other meanings, and science cannot really adequately define emotion, which I think is a huge statement. The physiology of emotion is linked to our nervous system and to the arousal of our nervous system. And one of the things Billy talks about is the fact that emotions can be lightning fast reactions. And both anger and rage are considered emotions. Billy says, though, that anger and rage are not exactly the same thing. And rage, he said, can lead to devastating result. You cannot fight rage with rage. Let me read this here. It says, this is from Billy's Anger and Rage article. He's written an article on anger and rage. These are very down to the earth. Today we're being very down to earth in our study of the Meyer material. He says here, by definition, anger is a violent, uncontained outburst leading right up to a fury of uncontrolled wild thoughts and their feelings as well as their emotions. Thereby, emotions must not be equated with feelings. Remember that from our earlier studies of the Mind of Thoughts? that feelings come from thoughts. They grow out of thoughts. But emotions are these wild things that are very damaging because they are two entirely different things, the feelings and the emotions. Emotions first develop and they break through and come to the fore at every appropriate and inappropriate opportunity. Thus, anger is conditioned emotionally and is brought about through vexation. So, anger and rage. Due to an ununderstanding, popularly anger and rage, they're often put on the same level as each other. However, it thereby concerns two fundamentally different factors, which are different effects and manifestations. Now, when feelings get out of control and emotions are allowed to run free, perhaps there is a difference between anger and rage. In rage, perhaps emotions do run free. Rage, then, must be met with love and feeling for others. You see, there's the negative and the positive. When you have rage, you must meet that with love and feeling for others. And that restores the neutrality. You can meet rage with kindheartedness, dignity, peaceableness. So you have to take the add a positive to the negativity of rage to bring things back into balance. And that's one way you can combat anger. Rage is sometimes defined as a violent, uncontrolled anger. If you're not thinking, that can lead to rage. By definition, then, anger is a violent, uncontained outburst, leading right up to fury, uncontrolled wild thoughts. And anger and rage can lead to a loss of discernment. Again, anger is the epitome of not being neutral. So if we learn that self-observation, we catch ourselves and we don't go into anger and rage. Now, discernment is the ability to judge, and we can use discernment looking at ourselves. With anger and rage, you lose discernment. Now, Billy has another interesting article on anger, that anger harms the liver. I think Marianne Eulinger-Mondrian, Switzerland, wrote that article. And that we should not retreat into our shell, and we should not be shouting. We have to learn to, again, be neutral positive. And if you get out of neutral positive, your hepatocytes, which are your liver cells, they are affected in such a way that they degenerate and cancer cells are built. So a lot of times cancer will manifest in angry people, people who live with a lot of anger. And there's something called intransigence, which means refusing to compromise or agree. Inflexibility is often associated with anger. Inflexibility. So intransigence. I don't know if I pronounced that correctly or not. But we need to learn to compromise. Inflexibility causes you to lock in neutral, lock in negative or lock in positive. We want to prevent anger, and that means not swallowing it entirely and not letting it out entirely. We have to remember certain things. Emotions are reactions. And emotions do not create thoughts. Feelings occur because of thoughts. Emotions arise spontaneously, and they're hard to bring under control by thoughts. And examples of excitation might be crying and laughter. Emotions, they rise so quickly that sometimes they're not noticeable. And emotions are very difficult to steer, almost impossible. There are certain things that can affect our unconscious. Alcoholism, desires, our gender affects our unconscious, the state of our health, the fitness of our body, the fitness of our consciousness. And there are certain activities in the unconscious mind which are automatic and are very difficult for us to go back and be introspective on. Now, again, in some of Askett's writings, it talks about this fellow named Reinhold Schmidt, who was deceived by the Giza intelligences. It says, what Askett said was, thereby such an earth human will become an unconscious deceiver of himself. Unconscious, remember? And of all those who believe in his explanations. Askett also said that George Adamski was lying about his experiences. Askett described George Adamski said that he carries out deceitful manipulations, but those were conscious. At least that's what Askett said. Whereas Reinhold Schmidt was deceived by the Giza intelligences. Now, our unconscious mind can affect the human body, and we talked a little bit about the stigmata and how people wound themselves through the power of their unconscious mind. And then we get these self-inflicted unconscious wounds. Now, in one case, a man named Giorgio Bongiovanni from Italy, he would actually have these wounds that would appear on his body that would take the shape of a cross, and they would sometimes appear on his forehead. That's how powerful your unconscious mind is. And this guy, he would weep tears of blood once or twice a week, all through the power of his unconscious mind. There was a lady named Teresa Neumann who lived in a village called Kanerschruth in Bavaria, Germany. And blood would actually flow from this woman's eyes. Again, just from her own unconscious thinking. See, our minds are so powerful, but we don't know how to control our thoughts. Most of the power is unconscious. And we can create horrible circumstances in our own lives through our unconscious mind. Anyway, this Teresa would bleed on most Fridays. She's also said to have survived for years only by eating wafers used in communion. Anyway, the power of the unconscious mind is incredible. Now, we mentioned that there's a difference between feelings and emotions, and that we are told in the Meyer information not to stop our or fight feelings, and that there's a difference between the feelings and emotions. Emotions come suddenly, surging, they're uncontrolled, and they're usually short durations. However, feelings manifest slowly and are associated with thought processes. Now, quite in contrast to emotions, which are not preceded by thought processes. And many times, both conscious and unconscious thinking, now this is another thing I still haven't understood. How can we think unconsciously? But we do. And unconscious thoughts can create feelings. And one of our biggest problems is that these unconscious thoughts function automatically. And when they're functioning, they narrow our frame of reference, and we focus on something negative or something too positive over and over and over. And then we start to generate feelings that harm our minds. Page 120 of the Might of Thought says, problem-causing thoughts and the evaluations and the feelings which arise from them, which are unconsciously tended and nurtured, operate automatically, and they throw our psyche into turmoil. And it is these automatic thoughts which are the crucial point. Again, automatic thoughts. And these people that are bleeding from the stigmata, these are automatic thoughts that they're not even in control of. So we have to analyze our thinking, because a lot of times suffering comes about through the product of our own thoughts and our own mental disharmony. And harmony, again, is a relationship that is characterized by a lack of conflict. So if you have conflict within your own thoughts, you have mental disharmony. So we need to have an orderly or a pleasing combination of thoughts and feelings internally. And we, again, this is very critical. We have to stop rebelling against circumstances that against our own views. And sometimes these difficult circumstances are important because they allow us to discover hidden powers within ourselves. Thoughts and circumstances of your life are very closely related. Lower thoughts form lower feelings, lower habits, and lower circumstances, like alcoholism, hate, resentment, sorrow, grief, bitterness, errors of judgment, and all kinds of suffering. If your thoughts are destructive, now here's another good thing. If your thoughts are destructive, then they will crystallize into confusion and exhausting habits. So if you have a thought and you're not sure whether it's in balance, if it's neutral positive, it will not lead to confusion. If you have destructive thoughts that are either too negative or too positive, you will be led into confusion and exhaustion. That's one way to help evaluate your own thoughts. And remember, good thoughts lead to good feelings, and good feelings lead to good habits, and good habits. A habit is a routine or a behavior that is repeated regularly. And it tends a lot of times to occur unconsciously. So we should learn to steer our thoughts consciously rather than let our thoughts just drift around all over the place. Because when our thoughts start to drift around all over the place, something called a Sartan in the German develops, which means to get very badly out of control of the good human nature. And when we get into that Sartung state, we are in a kind of self-created imprisonment. So we need to be thinking in terms of joy and peace and harmony, and we will have health and a good life. And the majority of all human beings have anxiety and fear and anger that are in their thoughts. Anyway, I know this was kind of a different kind of study than what we've done in a long time. It's immensely practical, the information in the book, The Might of Thoughts. I can't stress its importance enough, and I hope we get back to it soon. Have a great week, and we'll talk to you later. My name is Mark Snyder. This is Ohio Exopolitics. Have a great evening.